सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमाविद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। जय। So then, Brahma Samhita, we're on the discussions on the first verse. Then we were just starting the etymology of Krishna. So Jiva Goswami is explaining what's the etymological origin of the word or the name Krishna, and he's using this definition from the Mahabharata. Krish means existence, and Na means bliss. Combined together, the two roots indicate that Krishna is the supreme form of God. Krish means existence, referring in this case to the basis and cause of the existence of everything. Right? So when you say existence, means he's the existence of everything. Right? So that's going to bring out that. And then according to Jiva Goswami, Krish also means to overpower, right? To control, right? Because you're going to have, you are the existence, you are controlling. And then, then we'll get around next on the discuss about the bliss element. So Sat Chit Ananda. So that Sat Chit Ananda is expanding, is everything, right? So the Sat is the existence of everything. The Chit is the control of everything. And the Ananda is the experience gained from the results of action, right? It also means attraction. So you have existence and then you have attraction. Right? And then you have qualities and knowledge, and then that means then you have action. Right? And then you get from that action, you get results, and then from that is the experience of Ananda. So we see the attraction, the action, and the results, and the bliss that you gain, then will be the elements of what are you saying? You have the mechanical form, the existence of the thing, the action that that thing can perform, and the results that it can get. But then you have there the attraction and the bliss or the attachment that comes from that. So when you have Krishna, you have the attraction and attachment, right? So the existence and the bliss or results. We kind of catch that you're getting that everything that we're looking for existence that is always there. We're looking for things that we're attracted to, and we're looking for the happiness we'll get from interacting with those things. Right? So all that is Krishna. There's nothing that the jiva is interacting with that's not Krishna. It's just whether it's in its more, the reflected state of it, is it more towards the original reflection, or is it a distorted reflection? It's just like, let's say you have a tree on the bank of a body of water, and the water is perfectly still. You get a very good reflection of the tree. You see everything exactly. Now, let's say the wind is blowing, or the fish are moving about, or someone throws in a rock or something. Then the water goes ripply. So then the tree that you see in the water gets very distorted. It's still the same tree. It's just distorted. So you're going to have that the living entity, when you first reflect, so let's say the living entities are performing their duties nicely in mode of goodness. But then the problem comes is it's still perverted. Well, that's why it's called perverted reflection, because it's not about God, it's about us. Right, so even if we bring in piety, that people acknowledge God, acknowledge God's sovereignty, acknowledge God's control, ownership, all these things, but they're following the rules, Zainita. They're following the rules because it will get themselves benefit. It's not necessarily, In other words, they're pleasing God to get the benefit for themselves rather than pleasing God to please God. Right? So, in other words, God is the controller. He is the, you know, the overpower. He controls all. Right? So they just want to please him so that I get what I want. It's not that they're trying to please him as a person. We're trying to please ourselves as the individual we identify ourselves as. So that's the problem, is that identification is illusory, because we're not the body, right? I'm not the controller and enjoyer. So when the living entity sees itself, I'm servant of Krishna, but then when they perform an action to please Krishna, you know, for his pleasure, then that takes on the form of bhakti. That's then what you're doing. Because so when you're mixing the chit and ananda, so the chit, you're performing your action or abhideya to please Krishna. Right? So then that becomes the actual point. So so here is that you can say is Krishna then is the primary name or the chief name, right? He has unlimited names. And sometimes you come across that Govinda is the original name. But the point is Krishna is the chief name, because it brings out the element of how he is, you know, actually the basis of everything, right? So that aspect, then that'll be the prominent name. Okay. So then he control, it also means attraction, signifying that Krishna causes attraction or is attractive to all things, right? So he causes attraction, means whatever you have attraction for is because he's there. In the, I think it's in the fourth canto, when Vidura and Maitreya are discussing creation, then we see that in the creation there, when Krishna glances at the material energy, and the Pradhan separates into the 24 elements. Having separated into those 24 elements, then the primordial demigods can't do anything with it, because they're you know, you just have the atoms of earth, the atoms of wire, and you can't do anything with them because they have no connection with each other. I don't know if you've sometimes seen, let's say, sometimes when it's, you have two kinds of, you have a kind of snow that you pick it up, and if you squish it together, it makes a nice ball that stays, right? But there's also snow that you can pick up, squish together, and it just falls apart. It does not connect together at all. So basically, that's what they're dealing with. There's no, because there's nothing to bring them together. So then the demigods go to Krishna and say, we can't do anything, you know, please help. Right? Because they're just doing their duty with what's already there. He's providing the facilities. He's providing the ingredients. So then Krishna enters every atom, right? And the space between the atoms and that. So now you can put them together and make the 8,400,000 species, you know, the blueprint. You can make the 14 planetary systems. You can make the different areas, you know, down by the sea, you know, you have the plains, you have the valleys, you have the mountains, you have, you know, the rivers and lakes and those areas. And, you know, each one has their own lifestyle and own environment. So they can put all that together now. So the point is what happened is he entered it. So the attraction element is there. Existence is there, but now the attraction element. So he is the one causes attraction. And at the same time, as you can say, is he's the one that's attractive to all things. So if we're attracted to something, we identify it as the external form of what we're attracted to, but actually it's Krishna that's within that that is attractive. So all living entities are acting as living entities. They never don't act like that. They're always attracted to, you know, Krishna and how he is existence, how he's the attractive feature, how he is the potency of action, how he's the potency of result, how he's the potency of experience. that's everybody's always attracted to that. Just that in their ignorance, they think it's not to do with Krishna. And if you bring it up about that, it is that these things, they'll say, oh no, this is nonsense. So it just means they're so covered by illusion that they actually think they can't see things as they are. So that's as the distortion takes place. So then their idea of what is attractive gets more and more distorted because they can't see Krishna related to it. So then the quality of how they deal with material energy and what kind of material energy they have becomes less and less. Does that make sense? You know, so you can have, let's say you have these very refined aspects, let's say like different scent. You know, they say you have sandalwood. So you have the sandalwood, you know, that's been steamed off. You have the sandalwood that's been taken out by alcohol. You have the sandalwood that's been processed down to thicken it like this. And then you have fresh sandalwood. Then you have aged sandalwood. You have all these different things. And then depending upon the quality of the wood, depending on where it's from, the tree, you know, whether it's from somewhere in South India, whether it's from, you know, Malaysia, you know, or whether it's from Thailand, you know, Malaysia, actually, that I don't think there's any more sandalwood there. I think you get rubber trees, or now I think they've replaced the rubber trees with palm oil trees. You know, all the palm oil you get like in different things in your ingredients when you make things, processed food, it's all palm oil because it's the cheapest oil. So that's what you see in Malaysia now. So sandalwood went, rubber trees went, now you have that. So therefore, then what's in India, what's going to be in Thailand or wherever else that they're growing like that. And so it becomes, people can tell the difference in that and the refinement that's there in that. And so here's something, in, you know, that's in goodness, and then you're using that for Krishna, then it takes on the qualities of pure goodness. But otherwise, then they're refined and then taking, you know, certain Western foodstuffs and that are, you know, quite abominable. And, you know, the refinement of what it is there, you know, where it's from and how much is aged and, you know, different kinds of things. So they're using that same refinement, but now for, you know, things that are in the mode of ignorance instead of in goodness. And so that's what we mean by it's distorted. So that attractive feature is still Krishna, but they're dealing with the distorted aspect, right? Because sometimes people will say, well, how can Krishna be all this? There's so many terrible things. But that's because you're just taking the natural thing and distorting it. And so people start working with the distortion or start being attracted by the distortion. So you don't have any situation where any living entity is dealing with anything other than Krishna or their attraction to Krishna, right? That's all you're dealing with. They're looking for this or looking for that. But unfortunately, they don't know it's Krishna. And so then you have to, you know, by association, introduce these points. And then they start to, you know, appreciate that God's there. Then the thing is, okay, well, there's the world and there's God. How do you connect it to? But the point is the world already is Krishna's potency, controlled by Krishna. So you just have to, all you have to do is see is what's the recommendation in my service, my obligations or my duties, how to, you know, use those nicely to please Krishna, right? And it's always going to be direct activities, or direct, indirect, or indirect. So the indirect always are supporting the direct. That's what brings them in line. But it's just how distant they are before they get connected. You know, it's like, let's say you're getting on the bus to go to work, right? So, you know, you ride on the bus properly according to what's the appropriate way to ride on the bus. So that's there. That takes you to work. Then in work, you know, you do your work properly and all that. That gets you your money. And then that money, you can buy things that you use in Krishna's service. Let's say you buy bhoga, then you cook an offering for Krishna. So now when you're cooking the offering for Krishna, you know, you're using the techniques of cooking, which are secondary, but you're doing it for Krishna. Then when you offer it to Krishna, now everything all the way back down to you riding on the bus is connected to Krishna. What we see is there are the things that are immediately supportive. Then there's the things that are more distant or like that. So as one goes, one sees everything is connected. There isn't anything that's not connected. Yes, Mataji.
Thank you so much. Maharaj, in this case, is this attraction still part of Sambandha?
Yes.
And like this existence.
Well, it means it depends. You have the attraction of the existence, but you also have the attraction of wanting to perform action, because you see is that what's the natural aspect of Vibhava, right? Means that our attraction to Krishna, that, you know, our relationship with him. And then there's going to be which features of Krishna we're attracted to. And then that being attracted, then the resultant emotional response is anubhava. We want to do something in relationship to Krishna to express that affection. Does that make sense? So you have the aspect of, see, if you're looking at it as, you have the feature that in Sambandha Gyan, you have three aspects. You're going to have the Sambandha Gyan of Sambandha Gyan. You know, I mean, Sambandha of Sambandha Gyan, which is going to be the existence of the things that, you know, what is the nature of the field, everything in it, what are the relationships in the field, you know, who are you, what is the other things, and all that, what can be done and everything. Then you're going to have, so that's Sankarshan. Then you're going to have the Abhideya of Sambandha Gyan, which is Prajumna, which is then the desire to perform an action according in that situation, according to our qualification, right? Then you're going to have the Prayojana of that Sambandha Gyan, which is going to be Aniruddha, which is what results can you get, right? So you're going to have the mechanical, what's the field, what are the qualities and action and qualification required, and by performing that action, what results you can get. But then you're also going to get the experience of that. Does that make sense? So all that's in, you know, so the experience of the attraction and attachment to Krishna and the desire to do action, right? So you have Govinda, Gopinath, Madan Mohan. But now you have, from that, then you have Vasudev, which is, because each one of those is one aspect, you know, taking, in other words, Sambandha Gyan in Sat, Sambandha Gyan in Chit, Sambandha Gyan in Ananda. But when you use all of them together at once, that's Vasudev, that's the Abhideya. Right? Because the first one is thinking, feeling, willing. It's on the mental platform. When you come to the point where you're willing to do something, then you actually perform the action. You know, it's just like, let's say you're sitting there in the chair, you know, and you're feeling a little hungry. And so mentally you think about it, well, you know, what could we do and like that? And, you know, we could get this or that. No, I wouldn't want to eat that and this and that. No, or oh, that's too much trouble and all. But what's happening? You're still sitting in the chair. You're not doing anything. You're thinking about it, but you're not actually performing an action other than you thought about it. Now, let's say, give it some more time. We get more hungry. So it's getting to the point where now it's getting serious, the hunger. Now we're going to think more clearly, and then we're going to decide, okay, like that, you know, we can get this. You know, because it's like, if you're not very hungry, you have so many options. Right? And there's also the point is nothing's quite up to the standard that you want. But the hunger you get, then you start to be practical down to anything will work. Like I saw I was sitting in one, I think it was, what was that place called? I think it was where one of the places of Haridas Thakur was Bhajan Kutir. We had a small little kind of like temple there, center. And they had this huge banyan tree outside. And the banyan tree would drop leaves. You know, every day would drop so many leaves. And every morning, the goats would come through, these little Bengali goats, you know, they're about this big, you know. They would all come through, a whole bunch of them. And they would come and they would look for the freshest leaves, and they would pick those up, the leaf, and they would chew until they get to the stem. They bite off the stem and let the stem fall on the ground. They wouldn't eat the stem, and they wouldn't eat the other leaves. So then, you know, and that was early morning, you know, first thing after sunset. Then around noontime, they'd come through again. This time, excuse me, they've already eaten all the freshest leaves. So now they have to, they eat the ones that are not so, not quite as fresh, you know, like fresh, but also means fresh, meaning the younger leaves. Because they have somehow or another all fallen, but the youngest ones. The noontime, they'll come through and pick up the next group, not quite as young and fresh, and they'll do the same thing. They'll eat the leaf and bite off the stem and let the stem drop. They won't eat the stem. When they come through in the evening, any leaf that's there, they will eat it along with the stem. Right? Like that. So as the time they get more and more, the morning is just a little hungry. So yeah, just, you know, let's just get the things done. As it goes noon, more serious, but at night, you know, they're not going to be able to eat till the morning, right? Because the other one is okay, in 6 hours I can eat, but the other one is no, in 12 hours. So now they'll eat anything. So you'll find that is that in the beginning, you know, you're real, you know, how you say, like gourmet, you know, what you're going to this and that, and oh, you don't have this and that. And as it goes, it gets down to where, you know, whatever little bit of something's left in the jar, you're taking the, you know, how you say that, the piece of bread and sticking in the jar and with a, you know, a knife or spoon rubbing it around, because if there's nothing else, you'll eat that because that's better than nothing. Right? So, like, I've actually seen that. So the point is that it's a mental process, and it's until you get to the point where you fix on something. Yes, I can get into that. I can commit myself to that. So that's the willing. So when you will, then you do. But if you only think or feel, you don't do anything. So thinking, feeling, thinking, then you think enough, then you start to feel, yeah, that should be good. You think, contemplate that enough, then you will. Then when the willing comes, then you do. So thinking, feeling, willing. So thinking will be the Sankarshan aspect. Feeling will be the Prajumna aspect, because there's some attraction there. And then willing is then the Aniruddha, because you want the result. So now you perform the Abhideya. That's Vasudeva. So it's still part of Sambandha, but at the same time, it's representing the Abhideya aspect of Sambandha. Right? So you're taking this Sambandha, because it has all those aspects, but then there's the performance of it. So that's why you see in Sanatana Goswami's works, and he's the Sambandha Acharya, he's describing all the different things of bhakti. You know, in actions, performing that, but he's from the angle of Sambandha Gyan. What is the theory, the philosophy of all these things and how they relate to each other? Now, Rupa Goswami then is explaining in his sixth chapter of Nectar Devotion that he's explaining that, you know, taking from his elder brother's work, you know, the Hari Bhakti of Law, so he's explained about bhakti. He's taking the essential points there and then listing them as the 64 items of devotional service. Now, Rupa Goswami, he's the Abhideya Acharya, so he is explaining them on how you apply it. Right? So in other words, Sanatana Goswami is writing about Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. And then Rupa Goswami is then writing about Vasudeva, where you're using all that knowledge together. So that's why you see it has the senior position, because it's the formal. That's why Balaram, he takes care of that Sambandha aspect, because so he's the elder brother, right? So Sankarshan is the elder brother of Krishna, you know, like that of Vasudev. Does that make sense? So, because it's based on the theory there, you apply it. So that's why then, you know, because you have knowledge, then you can do things. Does that make sense? Right. So whether you're looking at the application of the Abhideya or you're looking at the contemplation or the knowledge of Abhideya, the knowledge of it, that's going to be Prajumna. The application, that's going to be Vasudeva. Because in the knowledge of it, you're thinking of just that, and you're thinking, well, there's the Sangharshanat, and then there's this, you know, and then which one goes together, and then that will give this result. Is that what you want? And so is that available in the field? You're looking at these things. But when you put it together and actually apply it, that's Abhideya. Does that make sense? So you're going to have an overlap there. So that's why sometimes you see Prajumna is described as Abhideya, and sometimes he's described as in Sambandha. Right? But in any case, he's dealing with the aspect of sick because you have Satchit Ananda. But now Krishna is Satchit Ananda, and then he performs, and he exists that way. Right? But then he expands his energies and interacts. That's Vasudeva. That's the pastimes. Right? So Krishna's Atmarama means those three all together, but not expanded. But then when they're applied, then you get.
And then, Maris, how to understand that statement, as you explained, there is everything exists, but it doesn't hold together. So what would be that in this?
That's avyakta.
Okay.
Well, that's actually, it means, yeah, because I think so. It's because you have pradhan, then you have avyakta, and then you have a sutra. I think that's the next thing. So the, well, sutra is actually, or you say, or mahatattva, like that. Sutra is when you add the desire of the living entity. So that's why sometimes you see is that it'll say it'll go from the manifest to the unmanifest to pradhan, right? But other times it just says it goes from the manifest to pradhan or just to the unmanifest. So basically pradhan and avyakta are the same thing. It's just whether it's mixed together as a khichdi or whether it's separate. Just like, let's say I'm going to make khichdi. I have all the different ingredients and they're all on the counter. They're all separate, but nothing's happening. You know, if I put them all together and all that, then you can't tell the difference. So pradhan means where the 24 elements, you can't tell the difference. It's a homogeneous mass. When I separate the mass into the 24 elements, but nothing is made from the 24 elements, so it's still unmanifest. You understand? So when we say manifest, it means it manifests as all the elements, you know, that are there, manifestations of the material world. So the primary creation means where you have the blueprint of all the species of life, all the planetary systems, all actions and situations, relations, results, experiences, everything is there. That's already there. So that's Mahatattva. Right? So that's why we call about Mahat, because everything's based on that. What's going to happen with Mahatattva? Because anything you do is going to be taking from Mahatattva. There's nothing that you're doing or anything that's not already there in the primary creation. You can't do it if it's not in the primary creation. But it's manifest then externally by Brahma here as the secondary manifestation where that Mahat now is externally manifest. But otherwise, the principle of what you can do with all those has already been done before. So that stage in between is of yakta. So it still can be called unmanifest. You know, I mean, it is unmanifest, but it is, you can say it's no, but it's manifest. No, it's just separated. It hasn't manifest. It's just ingredients mixed together or ingredients separated, but they're still the same thing. Nothing's been done with them. You know, but then when the primordial demigods then make the arrangement that these are all the different things on Krishna's order, then you have, you know, which gets which potencies, which, you know, what are the qualifications of each and everything in the cosmos. then that's our means are the material world, then that's what's there. So generally we only look at pradhan and mahatattva, but that stage in between of yakta, then it's still the unmanifest. It's just whether it's mixed together unmanifest or not mixed together unmanifest. So that's why you don't see that described, I think, in any of the other descriptions of creation. Because I think it's creation's been described about 3 or 4 times in the Bhagavatam. And so it's only in this one, because Vidura asked Maitreya, how is Krishna? He knows the creation, but generally we think of it, Krishna glances and then it all unfolds, right? And then at the end, then Krishna's there in the heart of all the living entities. So we kind of see him there at the beginning and at the end. We might catch him also, okay, he's there and he manifests Brahma, and then Brahma does. But he's asking, how is Krishna involved at each step? Therefore, we see he glances, it separates them, but then he has to enter into the atoms of that, in the atoms and between the atoms. That's the attractive, that's the prajumna. Otherwise, why would the living entity deal with unconscious matter? They're conscious. We're attracted to what's like us. Does that make sense? You know? So therefore, we're conscious, we're attracted to consciousness. If it's not conscious, we're not attracted. So that's why we think, no, but there's so many nice things, you know, like say in nature, but all those trees, everything in that are conscious, all the different things. They have living entities. But besides that, you can say, okay, well, the mountain. One is the mountain itself is probably conscious. We just don't know about that. But Krishna has entered into, you know, all the atoms that are there, and he is the, you know, the power or the greatness of a mountain. That vibhuti is him. So we're attracted by how majestic the mountain is. But that majesty is Krishna. It's not the rock. And it's not just that combination of atoms of earth. It's that Krishna is there in the atoms and he holds that together. And then he's given potency to different demigods to control and all that. And, you know, so many layers of Krishna's involvement. That's what's there. So you see that in that discussion with Vidura and Maitreya. Then you get more detailed how Krishna's involved. Right? You know, it's just like the difference between Mahatattva and, because we generally call Mahatattva, it means, you know, all that together. The primary creation, when it's all together, it's ready to now be put into each universe. Right? And then, you know, that blueprint's put into each universe as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So that's why he's the super soul of the universe. But then, each living entity is going to interact with a certain aspect or certain position or that within that, within the universe. And so, that's his world. In other words, you have the whole universe, but then each living entity has their experience. So then Krishna enters the heart of that living entity. So that he is the super soul of that world of that individual living entity. Right? So then Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the super soul for the universe, you know, everything that's inside all living entities and all of the material energy and the potency that comes from his internal potency that makes the external potency function. That's all there. He's the Lord. And then Mahavishnu is the Lord of the whole Mahatattva. Right? So that's there. But now when you add the desire of the living entity, their attraction to that, and therefore they want to be involved in it, that's called sutra. Right, so Mahatattva is there, but that the living entity is attracted to that as the controller and enjoyer and wants to deal with various aspects, that's called sutra. So that's why that's where the living entities are involved, and that's where Krishna is involved. In other words, you have material energy, which is an expansion of his energy. But then you have the aspect of he's entered that energy to make it be able to do something and make it attractive. And then it takes all these external forms. And then the living entity is extracted to those external forms. So factually, they're attracted to Krishna. They're not attracted to something else. Is that okay?
Thank you very much, Maharaj. Very wonderful.
Okay. 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 We're all good on that? No other questions? Okay. And then, yeah, and then it says that here that Srila Prabhupada also gives the following meaning. Krishi, repetition of birth. Na means one who checks it. He is Krishna. Repetition of birth and death, the one who checks. He is Krishna. Therefore, our repetition of birth can be checked only by God, right? Otherwise, we're going to go on and on and on. And you can temporarily stop it by, and it's also by Krishna's grace. He's Mukunda. You can get liberation. And that, but you'll be back. You haven't actually stopped. You've only temporarily stopped. You know, it seems like a long time when you're on the material platform like that, that you go outside of the universe and outside of the time factor that's there, but you're still working within the time factor of Mahavishnu and Sadashiva and that. And then for some time you'll be there and then you'll come back, even though it may have been who knows how many lifetimes of Brahma, how many manifestations of that. So you take, you know, 311 trillion years and, you know, you multiply that by however many, however long. So if you were there meditating and didn't, you know, were absorbed.
Minutes.
Then, you know, you take, let's say 20 minutes or, you know, and, or, you know, yeah, so 20 minutes. So then 20 minutes, that's going to be 20 times 60 seconds, right? And then, but actually a creation, a manifestation of the creation, maintenance, and dissolution is 3/4 of a second, right? So then it's going to be 1/4 more than that. So whatever that is, that's how many. So you can, by time here on Earth, you can, it's, you know, it's hard to even calculate how much time is there. Right? You can't even calculate the time. So that's how long you're there. But for you, technically, it's only 20 minutes. So you work so hard. And yes, according from the time here, it's a long time. But for your actual experience, it's 20 minutes. You know, one can say, no, but you'll stay forever there. No, you won't. Because you want liberation to get rid of the pain of the material world. That's the only purpose of it. It's not something else. They talk about Brahmananda, but the point is I will be happy because here I'm. Right? That's the only purpose. So it's still in the negative. So when they get to that point where they're outside the material world, they're in Mahakalapura, so they're free from all these different things. Right? You're free from all these different things. So then you're sitting there in the, you know, in white form, in white light, and meditating. And, you know, that I am Brahman. There is nothing else there. You're dealing in Shuddha Sattva. So, you know, very quickly it's going to be that you're, you know, happy, you know, that you're free from all material entanglement. But then after some time, because the living entity is active by nature, then what's going to happen is at some point you want to do something. And there is no opportunity to do something there. It's just all whiteness. Right? So that's the point. So then at that point, when you want to do something, then Lord Shiva, then he takes you and puts you back into the universes. Right? So technically, as far as you work so hard, all you got was 20 minutes or half an hour, 45. Just think about it. Some really difficult situation. How long can you stay in that situation? Right? You're outside, it's super hot, you go back in the room, you sit down, in the comfortable chair, you turn on the fan, you turn on the AC on turbo, you know, you sit there. How long will you just sit there going, wow, okay, yeah, this is nice? How long? At some point, you're going to, when you're not hot anymore, then you're going to want to do something, go look for something to eat, you know, go take a nap, go call somebody on the phone, do so, you'll do something. So that's the moment the Lord Shiva puts you back, you know, or you're in the house, it's some big kind of program or this or that. Maybe it's a family get together. It's totally insane. And you just can't. So you step out on the porch or something and close the door, you know, go, oh, this is so nice. You know, it's quiet. You can hear the birds. Yeah, this is great. How long will you stand out there? Forever? Because it's so great. You got away from all the people in the house. No, a few minutes. And then, you know, then you'll think of something else. You go back in, or, you know, you'll start doing something there or on the porch or, you know, whatever you'll do, go for a walk. That's the point, is that you're not going to stay very long. So however long it is, even if it's hours or days or weeks, still, it's only some weeks and then you're back in. But the point is you got out by Krishna's grace, but you're still back in. So, but here is Krishna, then worshiping him as a person, you as a person, then you can actually end the repetition of birth and death. Not temporarily, permanently. That's why then Madhvacharya says, real liberation. When we say liberation, we mean the liberation of where you, in a spiritual form, enter a spiritual planet and engage in a relationship with the Supreme Person. You know, that's actual liberation, because that you'll be in eternally. And all these other things are always temporary. Does that make sense? So in both of these, is that it's going to be, Krishna is dealing with, he checks it. So therefore, a repetition of birth can be checked only by God, otherwise not possible. So either temporarily permanently going back to Godhead, or temporary as liberation, or temporarily as getting out of, let's say, the situation here, going to the heavenly planets, or being an unfortunate situation here and being elevated to a better situation here. All that's just arranged by Krishna. So it's all done by him. Now it's just a matter of, but what's being offered, Krishna means he can, by worshiping him, serving him, you can end all birth and death on all levels of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, and actually come to anandamaya. So, yeah. Nobody can stop this repetition of birth and death without having the causeless mercy of God. Right? So that's Prabhupada's point. So, yes? Yes, Madhavi.
Yes. Imagine this, after this impersonal liberation, one would again come back as Lord Brahma, or how would the karma...
No. Not necessarily. Yeah, not necessarily. You might, but, you know, it's just a matter of what it is. Because the thing is you're going to go to what you remember. So if you remember, yeah, it was great being Lord Brahma, but the thing is you don't necessarily remember that. You're thinking about getting out of the position you're in. So there's a good chance you're just going to go back. That's what Prabhupada said, is that when they go, when the impersonalists fall, then they come down as blades of grass. Or maybe that's the Mayavadis. They were walking along, and some devotee was talking about, or brought up about, or Prabhupada brought up about, that you're walking on the sidewalk, and you have these cement sidewalks, right? And so it's all cement. There's nothing around. But then you see there's a little crack in the sidewalk, and there's a blade of grass sticking out. And then I think the devotees asked about that, or Prabhupada was talking about that, and Prabhupada mentioned those are Mayavadis. You know, because they try to absorb the soul of Brahma and become separated from all this and all that, but they don't give Krishna form, so they end up as a blade of grass. So then one time, I'm not sure what it was, if it was with Prabhupada, if it was not, but there was this one like Brahmachari. He was walking along, and as he'd go, when he'd come along, and on the sidewalk, when there'd be a grass sticking out, he'd go over there and jump on it. And then he'd walk along and jump on the next one. And then, yeah, what are you doing? He says, it's smashing Mayavadis. So, yeah. But the point is whatever it is, means if every living entity came into the universe as Lord Brahma, you have to remember that that ant that's biting you was also Lord Brahma. So it's just a matter of time. Even if they come in as Lord Brahma, how much time until they're, a bug on the wall again? But basically speaking, there's some desire you have that you want to do some action. It may be because you're purified, it'll be more sattvic. So I would expect your existence would be something more sattvic. But you're going to come in to that position in which you can manifest that particular desire that you had. Right? Now, for the demons that are killed by Krishna, so it means everybody who goes there is going to come back. Right? They'll all be back. But there is a uniqueness of those demons that are killed by Krishna. Then we always say, that one way you're either saying they get liberation or we're saying they go back to Godhead. Right? So now it's just a matter of whether you're taking the actual end, the final result of being killed by Krishna, or you're taking the immediate result. Right? So if we're taking the immediate result means they're killed by Krishna, they're liberated. So then they merge in Brahman. Means like we were saying, you're in Mahakalapura. It's not that they're there, they still have a form and they still like that. Because to meditate that I am Brahman, you still have to have the gross, a settled body and some kind of form that can hold it. Right? So they're there and they're meditating on Brahman. But then they're going to notice that the experience, now that they've been killed by Krishna, they've been purified and they're liberated. So on that liberated platform, now they can appreciate how Krishna is beyond, means the liberated position is beyond the material, but they can experience that Krishna, the experience of interacting with Krishna, is beyond the Brahman platform. So then they become attracted to Krishna. So then they go to Vaikuntha. Does that make sense? Means they could also just think of material and come back, but the point is that they're a little thoughtful, then they'll notice that Krishna is there. So that's why you can say, as Krishna killed them, they went back to Godhead, because they'll go to the Brahman, then they'll notice how Krishna was so much better than that, then they'll go to Vaikuntha. Right? So either way, that they get liberation or they go back to Godhead, then both are describing the same process.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. What is it?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I would just like
Hare
to
Krishna.
ask, Hare Krishna, I would like to ask about being one with Brahman. Is that considered to be in samadhi?
I can be, but it's still a temporary samadhi. It's not the samadhi that one's in Bhava Bhakti, where one comes to samadhi, where one's focused just on Krishna. That's ekayana. And so then that position, then you get the association of Krishna's associates in relation with Krishna in the pastimes. That then brings you forward to prema. So their position, even though they may be in samadhi, but the point is their samadhi just focused on Brahman. But the point is that since there's Satchidananda, how much absorption can Satchidananda have only on Sat? You understand? So
Yes,
that's why
yes.
you can't stay in the liberated position, because it only addresses Sat. Now, what about Chittananda? It doesn't address that. It can say it's no, but there's Brahmananda. But the point is that's just the neutral state. That's just existing and appreciating existence. That's why people like to exist. They don't want to die because they appreciate existence. But it's the standard for the living entity. But the point is that The ananda comes from interaction of the living entity with Krishna. That's ananda. The other, they call it Brahmananda, but you know, people call so many things. So they call it utopia. Oh, if we only had this, then the world would be utopia. And that, where is that utopia, right? You know, like that, you know. So it's good. And even people go to the heavenly planets. We see is everything's really nice there and the facilities are really nice there. But you see that the demigods, everything's going very nicely. No, they're envious of each other. It's like you perform your pious activities. You go to the heavenly planets. Someone else has performed their pious activities. They go to the heavenly planets. Now, let's say they've done more piety than you. That means the mansion they stay in is bigger than yours. They have more servants, right? They have more facility. So you want to enjoy. You're in the heavenly planets just to enjoy. So no one says that there's no envy in the heavenly planets. Right? When you go above the heavenly planets, then generally you don't have Maharjana, Tapa, and Satya. You don't necessarily have envy. Though it does come up sometimes, like you see with Daksha and Lord Shiva. So that was just envy. You know, it wasn't anything else. It did not have anything more glorious than all that. Oh, he was just being religious. He was just following. No, it's just envy. Right? But you don't see it manifest very much. Problems with that. You know, I mean, but, it's like the goats are cute, yeah. Right? You know, but specifically when they're small, when they get bigger, they're not as cute. And, you know, your wife seeing your goat head day in, day out, you know, it gets old after a while.
Is there like ego in the higher planetary systems then? There is no energy.
Yeah. It's just motive goodness, that's all. But motive goodness means that there's passion and ignorance mixed in. It's predominantly goodness. So the more predominant goodness is there, like Lord Brahma, you know, Lord Brahma, the nakshatras, that will be your highest form of like the Dharma Shastra, the highest form of goodness. Right? Like that. And so you're going to get the aspect of the dharmas. But then see, is that why are they on Brahmaloka? Because of it said that, let's say if someone's a nice Nistika Brahmachari their whole life, then at the end of life they go to Brahmaloka. Right? That kind of thing. Or you see the big yogis are there. This is not the guy with the beard and the top knot down at the yoga studio. We're talking about yogis who, you know, are fully absorbed in meditation and everything, that kind of guys, you know, in other ages and that. So there, and on top of Loka, there's only brahmacharis there. There are no grihasthas. So the grihasthas on Mahar, the first, the lowest of the four. So they can go up to Jhana at night. They sleep at night at Jhana because Mahar gets a little over hot from all the fires, you know, of the disillusion, you know, during the night of Brahma. So they sleep on Jhana. You know, Tapa, then that's all the sages, and then Brahma Loka, Satya Loka is Brahma Loka. And that, though they can go up there, you know, when there's programs and things like that, then they all go to Brahma Loka. You know, even the demigods and other sages, you know, can be, have that power. They can go up there, but they can't stay there. They can go for the programs, you know, but if they're sons of Brahma or Prajapati like that, then they could, you know, spend, but their duties, they live on Maharloka. So you're going to have that they're above the general drive of sense gratification. Doesn't mean something's not there, but that's not their main form. But Indra and his 22 heavenly planets or the other, you know, heavenly regions, you know, the earthly or the Bilaswarg, the lower planets, it's about sense gratification. So as soon as there's desire, material desire, there is envy. So that's the point. In karma, the fear is envy. In jnana, the fear is loneliness. right? So the Satyaloka will be more towards the loneliness, and then below that, it's all going to be towards the envy. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj. So then the samadhi for the Ashtanga Yogi, realizing the super soul in the heart, then is, can one say that that samadhi is with realizing the sat and the chid aspect of the Bhagavan?
That's if they meditate on super soul, and so then the yogi can either move forward into bhakti and become a devotee, or he wants to merge into the Lord. It's not a position you can stay. Does that make sense? Because Paramatma is just the Lord without his associates. So how can you stay with it? You can meditate on him, but how would you interact? You're interacting with Bhagavan. Or you want to merge in that supreme person. So those are your options. So either, like we see in Bhagavatam, that those great, like Prajapatis and like that, as devotees, they'd meditate on super soul. And then after they realize super soul, then now as devotees, they would act in devotional service. So that's why in Gita, it's talking about that path of Astanga Yoga and the path of Bhakti. They're all coming to the same place. It's just so much easier in with bhakti. The Astanga Yoga is you know, quite a difficult path, but it's meant for those who are more absorbed on the bodily platform. So they engage the body and do all those kind of things. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj. Now I understand better.
Thank yeah, you. Yeah. So samadhi is just describing how meditation works, the levels of it. But the point is meditation is supposed to be on Krishna. So, you know, in devotion, that's bhakti. If it's meditation on the Lord, not in bhakti, but, you know, because it should be done, that's yoga. So that's Paramatma. But if it's just, they don't meditate on the Lord, they just meditate on the existence of Brahman, then that's the impersonalist. The Brahmavadis, they just meditate on Brahman, right? Then you meditate on the person, so that way the yoga is higher, but then he either has to move forward into bhakti or back into Brahmavad.
Thank you, Maharaj. Yes, yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Then continuing here. Next, the word na, meaning bliss, signifies that Krishna is full of bliss and the cause of bliss to all. Considered together, Jiva Goswami comments that the word Krishna means, quote, he who is greatest by form and qualities, since he is a personification of bliss and is the ruler and attractor of all beings, end quote. Footnote 4. Like, you always have to have somebody who, I say, you know, in the argument, you know, but, you know, so some monists may argue that the word Krishna simply refers to the impersonal Brahman. They consider existence, Krish, and bliss not to be equivalent words with equivalent meanings to designate the one Brahman, right? Because everything has to be Brahman. There's only one. To designate one Brahman who is devoid of all qualities, right? So existence itself is still a quality. And bliss itself is still a quality. And then they insist that there are no qualities. But then how do you define something without the qualities? So their philosophy is incomplete. That's the problem, is that they're taking some complete aspect but trying to work with that only. Just like, let's say I go into the kitchen and I just have a frying pan. I do everything with a frying pan, right? I take the potato and I put it on the counter and then I smash it with the pan. Then I cook it in the pan. You know, I do everything in the pan. like that, because that's all I have. So it's not that the pan isn't in itself a very nice element of the kitchen, but it's not the complete kitchen. So that's what's happening in all these other philosophies other than the Vaishnavism, is that they're taking an aspect of the absolute or aspect of the, you know, recommended religious processes, and then they're trying to make a complete system out of that one thing. And so all other things can't find their position in it. So they have to artificially, you know, take something and stuff it into there. You know, they'll talk about, yes, Brahman has no qualities, but they're defining qualities of Brahman by saying it has no qualities. So they just go against their own philosophy. But because of illusion, then they don't notice. You know, or if you do point it out, they don't want to be wrong, so then they cheat. Right? So they've, you know, already here made a mistake. They didn't take the complete understanding because they're an illusion and they don't want to go, so they cheat. Right? And that, and then, you know, their intelligence or their mind, like this is not so great, so then they can't understand it, so they're imperfect senses, so they're always going to have, there's always going to be a problem. Besides the fact that this would be redundant and repetitious, this conclusion is overturned by Kumari Labhata's statement. Quote, the conventional meaning of words overrides the etymological meaning. When the context indicates a contradiction to the etymological meaning, the etymological meaning cannot be applied. So in other words, it means the etymology is there to back up the how you say, conventional meaning of the word, how it's used, right? So fortunately, let's say in Sanskrit, you have your conventional meanings are still derivatives of the root word, right? The etymological meaning. So it's just expanding from there. But it still is that you're meaning in a particular way, and then you can't take it and just reduce it down to just that particular root meaning, you know, where it loses the actual particular context, you know, of emotion or relationship or experience that is there in the word that the root may not. So if the root supports that, then you use the two together. If not, you're going to use the main one that's there. But now if somebody's misapplying the conventional meaning or something, and then you show the root that's supposed to be to bring it back to what it's actually supposed to be. Does that make sense? That's what is there. So these are fine points that's there. So he's saying that existence, bliss, all that, they're trying to take it back to these root, but at the same time as they're doing so without properly applying it, you know how it works, what can be actually seen and experienced, right? So that's the point, is we're taking Shastra, which is heard, we're contemplating it to the point where we can see how it practically applies into our life, right? So we're working with all three, but we're starting with Shabda. Well, let's say those who start with what I see, and then I contemplate what it is, and I try to bring it to some conclusion, then they'll always fail. They can never get to Krishna. The impersonal etymological interpretation of the word Krishna contradicts the accepted meaning. Krishna is the son of Devaki. Jiva Goswami quotes the Nama Kamudi to show how the conventional and etymological meanings coincide. Krishna, Shabdasya, Tamala, Shama, Trishi, Sri Yashoda, Stanandhaye, Para, Brahmani, Rudhihi. Krishna indicates the Supreme Brahman, Parabrahman, with the complexion of a dark tamal tree who drank milk from the breast of Yashoda. This is also shown in the Vasudeva Upanishad, Devaki Nandano, Nikilam, Anandayat. Quote, the son of Devaki gives bliss to all, end quote. Jiva Goswami concludes. Thus, Krishna indicates he who is composed solely of bliss, who is unchanging and eternally perfect, and who is the son of Devaki. Right? So means all that. That all goes back. So that's the point. He can be all that. So let me say it's contradictory, but the point is this: he is the source. He's the basis of everything. So that means you're going to have contradictory things. You have sweet and sour, but the taste sweet and the taste sour have all expanded from Krishna. So Krishna is the root of sweet and sour. So then you can't say that, oh, but this is contradictory. No, but he's the root of all that. That's the point. He is that. There's not a problem. We can't do that. But he being the source, we're not the source, you know, what are we the source of? Right? So that's the point is, he's unlimited, so he's the source of everything that we're doing. He provides the ingredients. We can work with the ingredients, with the qualities that we have. Right? But he is the source of all those, and he's the source of us. So he's in his own category here. But good. Then Jiva Goswami concludes this his discussion of the name Krishna by showing how it is equated over and over with Parabrahman. For instance, quote, "My dear Maharaj Yudhishthira, all of you, the Pandavas, are extremely fortunate, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, lives in your palace just like a human being. Gurham Param Brahma Manusha Lingam. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:10:48. Aho Bhagyam, Aho Bhagyam, Nanda Gopa Rajao Kasham. Yan Mitram Paramanandam Purnam Brahma Sanatanam. How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd men, and all the other inhabitants of Brajabhumi. There is no limit to their good fortune, because the absolute truth, the source of transcendental bliss, this eternal supreme Brahman, has become their friend." Srimad Bhagavatam 10:14:32. Yep. Okay. So then. So Ishwara. So then Jiva Goswami next analyzes Ishwara. So he's going through, he's analyzing each word by word, right? So he's starting with Krishna, the Mangalacharya, and then there's Krishna. You know, Ishwara Parama Krishna, but then he's starting with Krishna because he's showing that's there, then Ishwara, then Parama, Anadir, Adi, Sarvakarana, Karanam, like that. He's going through each one. Jiva Goswami next analyzes the word Ishwara. Since the word Ishwara refers to Krishna, who has just been described, Ishwara here means the ultimate controller of all things. This is indicated in the meaning of the word Krishna when we consider another meaning of the word Krishna as given in the Gautamiya Tantra. Quote, "The Lord is called Krishna because he overpowers Karshayet, all moving and non-moving entities in the universe in his form of time." Even the word for Kala, time, means to control. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a complete description of this controlling aspect of Krishna given by Uddhava. Quote, "No one is equal to him or superior to him. He is the master of the three energies and three Vishnu. All his desires are fulfilled by Lakshmi, and his rulership over his devotees, pastimes, and qualities. His feet are praised by the sound of 10 million crowns of the devatas, offering respects while presenting gifts." Srimad Bhagavatam 3:2:21. Yeah, so you have the controlling aspect. The mention is there in Krishna, but it's bringing out, you know, the existence that he's the cause of everything, and he's the cause of bliss. And then bliss means that it's going to be the results of action, right? So then that action means that he's actually in control of action. But then here is that the next word is, you know, is Ishwara. So then that can be brought out nicely there. Does that make sense? You know, the action aspect. Parama. As revealed by Sri Jiva in this section, the first verse of Brahma Samhita also makes mention of the Lord's feminine energy. The word Parama means, quote, "the Lord who possesses the most excellent para, shaktis in the form of Lakshmi," end quote. These Shaktis are described in the Bhagavatam. Quote, the Lord, performer of the inconceivable, constantly remained in each of his queen's palaces, which were unequaled and unexcelled by any other residence. There, although fully satisfied within himself, he enjoyed with his pleasing wives, and like an ordinary husband, he carried out his household duties. Srimad Bhagavatam 10, 59 and 43. And quote, when Lord Sri Krishna was dancing with the gopis in the Rasa Leela, the gopis were embraced by the arms of the Lord. This transcendental favor was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune or other consorts in the spiritual world. Indeed, never was such a thing even imagined by the most beautiful girls in the heavenly planets, whose bodily luster and aroma resemble the lotus flower, and want to speak of worldly women who are very beautiful according to material estimation. Srimad Bhagavatam 10, 47, 60. The Brahma Samhita will later state, Shriya Kanta Kanta Paramapurusha. In Goloka reside the beautiful young women and their lover, the supreme male. Gopal Tapani Upanishad says, Krishna is the Lord endowed with many energies in the form of gopis. Since Krishna alone is Parama, endowed with such energy, he is called Adi. First, Digdarshini Tika 5.1. Right, so this is so that's from Deva Goswami's there. So Parama, so you're going to have Krishna and Ishwara, but then you're going to have Parama, because it means his energies. So when you're talking about he's the Lord and he's the controller, he's the controller of what? He's the Lord of what? Energies. And that's the point that comes down. So that energies means he's interacting. So the ultimate point of interaction is then you see in his pastimes in the spiritual world with the queens in Gorkha, with the gopis in Vrindavan, like this. You know, so that'll be on the Bhagavan platform. You know, as Super Soul, then he's controlling all the energies and all that. And then as Brahman, then he is the existence of everything, you know, which is then, you know, has all the qualities of his energies. So in any case, he is the one that's always there. So you always have him with his energies. Does that make sense? Like Satya, you know, we say truth, but truth is the energy. Purusha, now that's the controller of the energy. Right? Satyam Param Dhimahi. Right? So Satyam is there, but Param, he's above. He's the controller of that. Satyam Param. So he's the Purusha that controls Satyam. So you can't separate him and his energies. Right? Does that make sense? So that always is there. So you have him as the person, Krishna, how his existence and everything is above everything, but at the same time is how he controls it. And what does he control? Parama. Yeah. Does that make sense? So the energy. Yeah. Okay. Anadir Adi. Srila Jiva Goswami explains this phrase thus. Since Krishna alone is Parama, endowed with such energies, he is called Adi, first. One should not think that being first or Adi means that Krishna is simply a form that appears in the material world. To make this clear, the word Anadihi is also used. This indicates that a form appearing in the material world as Krishna is an external form existing, is an eternal form existing in the spiritual world. Gopal Tapani Upanishad thus says, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. He is the chief eternal being and the chief conscious being. Yeah. So then he's the first. It's from him that all other things are coming. It's from him that the Parama is coming. It's he is the controller of that. You know, so Krishna is the source of all these different aspects. Sarva Karana Karanam, Srila Jiva Goswami explains. Because of his status as first, he is called Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes. He is the cause of even the creator of the material realm, the Purusha avatar. Devaki says to Krishna in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, quote, O soul of all that be, The creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe are all carried out by a fraction of an expansion of an expansion of your expansion. The Purusha Avatar, Yasyam Sham Sham Sa Bhagena Vishvot Pati Layodayaha. Today I have come to take shelter of you, the Supreme Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:85-31. So he's saying carried out by a fraction of an expansion of an expansion of your expansion. Right? The Purusha means that this whole material creation is going on just by a fraction of your portion. Lakshmi mentions, I think in Lakshmi Tantra, that it's 1 billion, you know, fraction of his energy, or 1 million, depending on how you're looking and things like that. But the point is whether you're saying, you know, a koti, or you're saying an arbudha, or like this, basically it means that it's a very, very small portion. Like that. That's all you do. That's all it takes to run the material world, right? It doesn't take much else to run the material world. So we're thinking, oh yeah, it's a big place, so much, you know, so important and this and that, but you're just dealing with a fraction of a portion of what's going on here. Right? And, you know, we even see is that when you're in Ananda, when you come up to Brahman, it means you come up to Brahma's position as the best in the universe. And beyond that, that's just like a drop in the ocean of Brahmananda. And Brahmananda is just a fraction of a portion of a drop compared to the unlimited ocean of bhakti. So therefore, if you're dealing with that, how much potency does it take to run this place? Right? Because it's a matter of how much you have to create, you know, an experience. So, since you're dealing with living entities that are starved of actual proper interaction with Krishna, therefore any little thing that will give any little experience is something that catches their attention. So it hardly takes any potency to make this place seem so exciting. Right? But in the spiritual world, because you're dealing with Krishna, the original person, then the experience that you're getting, that's unlimited. Right? And because we're in the fire of Krishna consciousness, then we can experience that unlimited aspect, even though we're limited. Right? In other words, the unlimited feature of the Lord and that happiness can be experienced by them, even though they're limited, because they're connected with the complete whole. So that's the point. When we please Krishna, then we become happy. There isn't another way to do it. One can think, no, but if I do this first, then I'm happy. Then I can do for you. No. That's a mixed point. No, you please Krishna, then automatically. Okay. Such chidananda vigraha. Some detractors may stubbornly maintain that the roots Krishna simply mean supreme bliss, do not indicate a person. However, this part of the verse shows how the Lord possesses an extraordinary form full of eternal bliss. Right? Such chidananda vigraha. Because they're just simply trying to say supreme bliss. That's all they're saying. That's what it means, supreme bliss. It doesn't mean a person and all these other things you're attributing. But the point is, that's what I said before, is when since you're taking, you know, trying to take some etymological, but it doesn't maintain the conventional. While this other, the explanation of Jiva Goswami, then does both. It's according to the etymological root, and it's in its conventional application. So, therefore, that's going to be seen as higher. Sticking to just you're the roots, that's why Vyasadeva said, if you just stick to the etymological meanings, then you're a fool. And it gives 100 types of fools. So one of them is this, which he's just mentioned there, is that sticking to the etymological root meaning of a word and not actually appreciating the conventional and the poetic aspects, you know, of how it's used. In other words, somebody speaking something with an intent, but you're not taking their intent, you're just taking the word, breaking it down to its mechanical meanings, and then trying to say that that's what they're trying to say. So that's a fool. Even though he may be a seeming educated fool, you know, but the point is he's still a fool. You know, like that. So sattva, now he's going to break down sattvigraha, chitvigraha, and anandavigraha. So satchit anandavigraha. So, you know, his form is sat, his form is chit, and his form is ananda. Okay. Sattvigraha. Sattvigraha means that his form does not change. In the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the devatas, headed by Brahma, pray, Satya vratam satya param tri satyam satyasya yonim nihitam cha satye satyasya satyam rita satya netram satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapannaha. The demigods prayed, O Lord, you never deviate from your vow, which is always perfect, because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone. Being present in the three phases of cosmic manifestation, creation, maintenance, and annihilation, you are the supreme truth. Indeed, unless one is completely truthful, one cannot achieve your favor, which therefore cannot be achieved by hypocrites. You are the active principle, the real truth, in all the ingredients of creation, and therefore you're known as Antayami, the inner force. You are equal to everyone, and your instructions apply for everyone, for all time. You are the beginning of all truth. Therefore, offering our obeisances, we surrender unto you. Kindly give us protection. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.26. Gopal Tapani says, Yo sau sorye tishtati, yo sau goshu tishtati, yo sau ga palayati, yo sau gopeshu tishtati, govindan maritur bibheti. He is unchanging, free from birth and old age. He who stays in Vrindavan is indivisible. Death fears Govinda, who stays with the cows, who protects the cows, and who resides with the cowherd people. Right, so his sat vigraha means his form doesn't change. It's always the same. It has that eternal nature. So he may expand, and then that expansion has that particular aspect. It's taking a feature of him. So he, being sattva-vigraha, means all the elements of existence are there in him. And then he wants to take certain aspects and manifest that for a particular pastime. Then he does that, and that form is there. So that way he has unlimited forms, because he has unlimited qualities. But he still, as Krishna, he as the original person, has all those qualities, all perfectly balanced in that, in himself as the one person, the original person. Yeah, good. So chit vigraha, the statement, quote, having a body of knowledge, chit vigraha, quote, means that the form has the power to reveal itself to others because it is self-revealing. Right? It means you can't know Krishna unless he reveals. But that's the point, is he being chit, he being knowledge, and he reveals. It's not that, yes, by my analytical, then I find knowledge. No, you're still just even your dealing, it's according to Krishna's potency that you have even the power to deal with it. Because we have to remember that knowledge is a potency of the Lord, and we're not the Lord of his potencies. He is. So this idea is that, no, we know truth, we know knowledge and all that, we will analyze. But no, he reveals. So even to the materialists who are using the inductive method, he reveals the knowledge that they go after. Otherwise, why is it people are dealing with something every day, day in and day out, and nobody comes up with an idea? And somebody, you know, to do anything different, and somebody's looking at it and going, hey, we could do it like this, and it improves it so greatly. That's because Krishna reveals. That's why sometimes you see it becomes very hard to say in the modern society who invented this or who invented that, because at the same time, in different places on the planet, different people have had exactly the same realization at the same time. It was just time to reveal that. So then you have all these different things happening at once, because just the modes change, and then it's there, and those who have the karma for it, then they do. So it's still Krishna's potency. He still reveals. So even the mundane people, they know things are revealed because Krishna allows it. But to know him, then you have to approach him in, you know, submission and devotion, you know, following the footsteps of the devotees. Then he reveals himself. So it's not that we figure it out. No, he reveals. But he gives a path to how to reveal. We want to do. Then he even gives us the ability to function on the path, and then it works. That's the point. Yes? No? Very good. Okay. So then we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki.